Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome, welcome, welcome to Radio Islam Medium Wave 1548 on the Globe Trotting program with myself, Muhammad Lambat. And what a lovely day, alhamdulillah, and to be in the studio, shukr alhamdulillah. What a lovely atmosphere this morning. And coming to Lanesia all the way from Johannesburg this morning, clear roads, what a pleasure to drive to Lanesia. You know, normally when I come during the week, if I have to come this side here, it's like I've got to plan an hour ahead leaving home. Shukr alhamdulillah, on a Sunday we can wind it and come here to Lens in quick time, alhamdulillah. Shukr, last week's program we had a lovely, lovely, lovely response also, alhamdulillah. We had a good response regarding New Zealand, and it was such a fantastic program where we had the Muslims of New Zealand talking to us, such a beautiful thing to do. And also where people come back to us and refer to where they've been to New Zealand, the do's, the don'ts, and whatever it is. There's so much that we learn from. And I really appreciate all the input and the feedback from all the listeners out there who respond to our discussions that we have on a Sunday on our SMS line 072-786-5520, 072-786-5520. Jazakallah for the emails also that's been coming in, Mohammed@globetrotting.co.za. Mohammed with one M, M-O-H-A-M-E-D, Mohammed@globetrotting.co.za. I do have a few emails to respond to. I'm telling you, I'm giving you my email address. Don't think I don't respond to them. I am going to respond to them. I do have them on my desktop. This week has been a really hectic week, but I will definitely respond to your mails. I've got somebody that's querying about Turkey, somebody's querying about Vietnam holiday for December, somebody mailed me on Thursday, two people mailed me for Vietnam holidays also. I will respond to them. You asked me for some of my input and itineraries that you would like to suggest to you. I will definitely pass it on to you, inshallah. So please bear with me. We do have a day job, so unfortunately sometimes I can't respond immediately, but I'll try my utmost best to do it when I can. Now, we have lots of different types of holidays that people go for. We have people going for holidays to a city and they would say that's an adventurous holiday. Wow, alhamdulillah, that's an adventurous holiday. And then you have somebody sitting on the beach, sitting there for a day, 2 days, 3 days, watching the water and measuring the line of the water far into the ocean as you look at the waters. That is an adventure. Wow, alhamdulillah. Then you have somebody that goes into jungles, they go into forests, that some people really, really enjoy. And they just want to birdwatch, watch the animals, and that is an adventure. So everybody has different adventures when they go for holidays, and those adventures that you have are your personal adventures. And if I have to tell you that, listen, how can that be an adventure if you're walking and trailing into the forests, and I tell you, how can that be an adventure? For me, that would probably not be an adventure. That would be, you know, just walking in the bush. But you would come back and tell me, listen, how can I explain to you how I feel about that? Talking about adventures, talking about all those things, it's the it's person's personal taste. It's not what I tell you. It's not what you would tell me in return of my adventures. We do many different things in life, alhamdulillah. But when it comes to holidaying, that's the difference. And like I say, some people, I know of people that go from here to Durban probably for a weekend or for a week when it comes to the peak season. When they go to Durban, I personally know of somebody that they'd park their car in the parking lot, in the hotel basement, whatever it is. That car would collect dust for the week. And the week thereafter, when they have to come home, they start the car. I hope sometimes the batteries are not flat, but they start the car. And they got to get out of the hotel. And that's what they've done. Sat in the hotel. Just chilled out, relaxed. They say that's what they enjoyed. But that's how it goes. Alhamdulillah. Now, we do have people that have a taste of adventure for mountain climbing. Now, mountain climbing is something which is unique. Like they say, Aprawara can't do it so much. Why? Because with us, when it comes to things like that, oh, you know, Marija Yamre, you can't do that, you know, Parija hai, and things like that. No! You can do it. You can enjoy it. If you love these things, you can enjoy it, you can do it. You know, for the very first time when I did skydiving, and people in the family tell, are you mad or something? How can you do such a stupid thing, jump out of a plane? I'm jumping out of a plane. Yes, I've got a parachute. I'm coming down. Yeah, but what if the parachute don't open? There's a second parachute. Now, you know, I know the third question that's going to come from their mouth. What if the second parachute don't open? Then I say, I become a bush painting. That's what I have to tell them. So that's the way it is. But alhamdulillah, with all the jams that we've had, shukr alhamdulillah, success. I had one mishap where one of my jumps, the parachute didn't open. And I pulled 1,000 feet above sea level. I just pulled my chute and I landed. It was quite far from the drop zone, but I landed, alhamdulillah. So that's the way it is. Likewise, you have mountain climbers. You look at mountain climbers and you say, why do you want to go and stress yourself out? Go up so high into the mountain and go up there and it takes you days to go up. Takes you days to come down probably. Why do you want to do that? But you do have different types of mountains. Now, I just want to tell you of a few mountains and then we're going to discuss about mountain climbing. But it's going to be very interesting. We do have a guest in the studio also who's going to be talking to us and who's got personal experiences and who's just come back from a trip. But before I introduce him, I just want to tell you just of a few mountains and mountains which our guest has done already. So the first one, which is, I would say, to start off I would call it an adventurous hobby. You start somewhere with something small, and from there you build up. Now, you can't just go right to the top of Everest and say, "Nah, I'm a mountain climber." It takes time to do that. For example, the comrades guys, the runners, they will start with 1 kilometer, 2, 5, 10, 15, 20, and they'll go up for the comrades. Then you get cyclists. They do the same. And when I look, and a friend of mine last week, he's telling me he drove 80 kilometers Sunday morning. I thought, are you nuts or something, 80 kilometers? But when he started off with 2 kilometers and he was fagged out because he's a smoker and he was fagged out. And I said, now, you know, what do you want to die for that now? And today, 80 kilometers is nothing for him because they go in hundreds of kilometers. That's the way it is. Now you get Mount Elbrus, which is the highest mountain in Russia and in Europe. And the 10th most prominent peak in the world. A dormant volcano. Elbrus is the Caucasus Mountains in southern Russia, near the border with Georgia. Now, we've spoken about Georgia being one of the beautiful cities in the world. And it borders Georgia. Elbrus has two summits, both of which are dormant volcanic domes. The taller west summit is about 5,642 meters. The east summit is about 5,621 meters. That is above sea level. The east summit was first ascended on the 10th of July, 1829, by Khilar Kashikov. These Russian names, hectic names, but anyway. Elbrus stands 20 kilometers north of the main range of the Greater Caucasus and about 65 kilometers southwest of the Russian town of Kislovodsk. Its permanent ice cap feeds 22 glaciers, which in turn gives rise to the Baksan, Kuban, and the Malka rivers. Now, when we talk of giving rise to the rivers, if you look at these mountains, they're kept with snow all the time. Snow has to melt from the top. And all that pure water that comes down. Now, if you know, if you've been to Pakistan, right up north of Pakistan, Murray area, you'd find that. You'd find the ice-capped mountains. And at the bottom of the mountain, you'd find a gush of water where you can put your glass at the bottom or your cup at the bottom and you can drink that pure water. It comes from the mountain tops. Now, this is what's happening here. And Elbrus sits on a moving tectonic area and has been linked to a fault. A supply of magma lies deep beneath the dormant volcano. And then you have Kilimanjaro, which is the next one. And with Kilimanjaro, with its three volcanic cones, the Kibo, the Mawenzi, and the Shira, is a dormant volcano in Tanzania, which is close by to us. And it's the highest mountain in Africa and rises approximately 4,900 meters above sea level. From its base to about 5,895 meters above sea level. The first person known to have reached the summit of the mountain were Hans Meyer and Ludwig Purchaller in about 1889. The mountain is part of the Kilimanjaro National Park and is a major climbing destination. The mountain has been the subject of many, many scientific studies because of its shrinking glaciers and disappearing ice fields. And we find lots of companies. What they would do is, for team building, they would go to Mount Kilimanjaro, because it's a stone's throw from South Africa. Then they'd go to Mount Kilimanjaro just for team building. They wouldn't probably summit, but go to certain distances to the going towards the top of the mountain. And then you have the Everest Base Camp, which is a common one for many, many people around the world. and it's either of two base camps on opposite sides of Mount Everest. It could be any Everest base camp on given route, but this is less common since the two main routes became standardized. The south base camp is in Nepal, and that's, the altitude of that base camp is about 5,364 meters above sea level, which is 17,598 feet. Now, in Johannesburg, we already are almost 2,000 feet above sea level. And you're talking of this being 17,000 feet above sea level. And then you have the north base camp, which is in Tibet. And that one is 5,150 meters above sea level. And these camps are rudimentary campsites on Mount Everest and are used by mountain climbers during their ascent and descent. South base camp is used when climbing via the southeast ridge, while north base camp is used while climbing via the northeast ridge. And then you have the Andes Mountains, which are the longest continental mountain ranges in the world. They form a continuous highland along the western edge of South America. This range is about 7,000 kilometers long, and it's about 200 to 700 kilometers wide, and an average height of about 4,000 meters. The Andes extend from north to south through seven South American countries. That is Venezuela, Colombia, Ecuador, Peru, Bolivia, Argentina, and Chile, going across all those countries. Wow, what a beautiful sight that must be when you go and you look at those mountains. It is just amazing. Now, I'm talking of mountains. To some of us, you'll say, oh, you know, Hanu, mountains, what about mountains now? But when you're passionate about a mountain, and when you love these mountains, and when you look at a mountain and you look at it as my friend, my partner, and when you look at it like that, you look at it with a different eye, and that is exactly what Bilal Vahid Isub does. And alhamdulillah, brother Bilal, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Alhamdulillah, you've just come back from a trip, and that just the discussion of the trip on a very brief scale with you tempts me, and I think it will tempt many of our listeners to want to do what you've done. Your physique is very small as you're sitting in front of me, and you've peaked the mountain. My first thought was, what if the first wind comes? What happens to you? Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam, Muhammad, and assalamu alaikum to the listeners out there.
Jazakallah for joining us on the Sunday morning, coming to the studio on an early Sunday morning. You've just got back. I don't know if you've acclimatized yourself to our Johannesburg weathers and our altitudes and so on. You've just come back and you agreed to come and sit and talk to us. I really appreciate that.
Yes, I've come in 3 nights ago. I am used to the new environment again. My body is acclimatized. It's taken me a couple of days and I'm back home.
Alhamdulillah. Now, we do seem to have an issue here with the microphone. Let's just get that done. Can you hear me clearly? Okay. Mohanda, are we okay? Can we listen to... Can you just give us a bit of a... just a little feedback on yourself, please.
Okay. I grew up in Lanesha.
Okay. Do you continue?
I schooled in Nirvana Secondary School. Started working really early in my life. At the moment, I'm running 5 businesses in the marketing space for ICT companies, multinationals. We have about 200 employees in our company that contribute on a daily basis. My weekends are spent lazing around. My work life's pretty hectic, and mountain climbing and trekking is the distraction. It's my means of finding balance in my life.
Now, you're saying your weekends are lazing around. Obviously, you have to laze around. We don't have mountains around us here for you to go and explore.
Well, there's lots of little trails around Saker Bos and Kopervisberg in Johannesburg. There is a lot of activity to do in Johannesburg, but nothing at the magnitude of the mountains that I've climbed.
Now, first of all, the first question would be, what tempted you and what brought you into the space of mountain climbing?
Mohammed, I'm certainly not a thrill seeker. I do like adventure. I do have a love for mountains and rivers. But I do have a hectic lifestyle, and finding that balance, it's the other end of the pendulum when you look at what can be achieved in a mountain. Mountain climbing, mountain trekking, it can be a solitude, a place of solitude, and you can do it in as an individual, or you can do it as a group, and that's what where the adventure lies. Why do I climb trap mountains? It's a getaway from what we experience on a daily basis. And when you're out there in the mountains, you have an opportunity to challenge yourself and to understand what you actually really capable of.
Now, when it comes to getting out into the mountains and so on, you are a group of guys doing it, or are you solo when you do that?
I am solo. From day one, I started this, call it a hobby, in 2010 when I did my first summit Kilimanjaro. It happens that every time I intend to summit a peak or to attempt summiting a peak, whenever I tell people about it or invite people to join me, everyone is excited and everyone says yes. And I'm the kind of person that if I say I'm going to do something, I go and do it.
Yeah.
By the time the date comes to get done, what was a group of 10 ends up being a group of 1. And therefore, I've done it all by myself.
Because mommy or daddy must have told your chomas, hey, marija hai amre.
My mother is very supportive. So is my wife.
Alhamdulillah, that's fantastic to know. But now, to go alone, that is discipline. And I always say, when somebody does something, when they have a hobby, or when they have an adventure in their life, and they do it alone, solo, and not just once, they go several times, that is discipline. Now, from 2010, to do something like this solo, when you go to the mountains or the mountain base camps and so on, do you meet up with a group and then you just make chummies with those guys and you go on?
Yeah, let me first say that when you're doing things by yourself, it's because you've set a purpose and you've set a goal for yourself. So therefore, seeing it through is important for yourself. When you get to the other side, when you get to especially the international destinations, you tend to meet a lot of other solo climbers as well. And you usually club together and decide to, especially if your start dates are on the same date, you tend to club together and decide to ascend together.
Now, to go up, what I've heard many a times, when I'm not familiar to mountain climbing, like I said, it was not on my bucket list, not on my agenda, and I never thought of mountain climbing. But when our South Africans went and they picked Everest and so on, then we hear of Sherpas and we hear of these guides and so on. Do all mountains have these guides that we talk about?
No, they don't. Sherpas are available on most mountains, and Sherpas is the crew that will help carry your goods, your extra baggage, that if you need be. Because not only do you need a range of equipment, but you also need to carry a backpack with other stuff during the day, your waters, your meals. So Sherpas are not available on all mountains.
Okay, so then you're going out on your own. Now, if you are going alone, completely alone, isn't it dangerous for you to go up to the top then?
Muhammad, you don't go completely by yourself.
Okay.
You always find a local guide, a qualified local guide that has preferably ascended that mountain a couple times during that season.
Okay, so you've got to employ them to take you up then?
Yes.
You just got to follow them to the top and that's it?
Yes.
And then as far as your gear is concerned and so on, do you have your own gear, mountain gear? Because when you look at the mountain climbers and you look at their gear and you wonder, wow, what is this now?
Yeah. So, the investment in the correct gear is a heavy investment for an individual. Gear is available at the destinations if need be. There's always rental shops where instead of buying the plastic mountain climbing boots, which cost upward of 10,000 rand a pair a year, you could hire you there for less than, for a couple hundred rand. So, most of the gear can be hired on that side. I personally have over the years invested in my own gear, so my trips have become more economical, more cheaper as it's gone by because I'm reusing the same equipment.
And that's your temptation to not let it sit in the cupboard, I presume?
For sure. If you've made the investment, then use it.
Now, we're going to be talking of all of your treks that you've done and all of your mountain climbs, but we'll do that right after we come back from the shops. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back. If you just joined us, you're listening to myself, Muhammad Lambat, on Radio Islam, medium wave 1548. And we are on the Globe Trotting program with Bilal Vahid Isup, who is a mountain climber. And when I say that, I just love to say it now, mountain climber. We've spoken to so many different people, talking of so many different things, so many different destinations, and so many different experiences. And here we're talking about mountain climber? I can only imagine. When we say mountain climbing, why do you think, Brother Bilal, why do you think we, in our communities especially, We don't hear of these things. We don't hear of people wanting to do this. Why is it so?
I think perhaps because we're inherently born with certain fears. I'm talking from a societal perspective.
Yes.
Our society, our community fears anything that's dangerous, anything that's extreme. We are meant to be average.
Because we're mommy's boys and girls.
For sure, for sure. And I always tell my kids, our family as a motto is never average, always awesome.
Yes.
Apply that to every day, everything you do in your daily life, and you'll always succeed.
Break fears when the child is young. Break those fears. As you would see naturally, the children, as they grow up, they do have their fears. Break their fears. Throw them into the deep end. And you'll see that will just change over time. Is that the way it is?
Yes, and we have to lead by example. If we are monsterizing a mountain climb,
yeah,
and we make it sound so difficult, a lot of people will shy away from it.
Yes.
And I suppose this is what we're trying to do by the show as well. Just open people's minds to the possibilities that are out there.
Towards the end of the program, will it be okay if we give you a number if anybody wants to contact you and probably just ask you more about these things? Because these are adventures which people don't... It's not just off-the-cuff adventures. These adventures, they got to sink in. Like now we're talking to people. The listeners out there, they're listening. I can clearly picture in front of me, some of them are saying, Hanu bolta chevi, you know, what are you talking about, these people? But for me and you, in this space that we have in our lives where we want adventure, for us it's, you know, it's everything. For example, I give you a chocolate, and I have a chocolate, those dark coffee chocolates, and I just, you know, I just don't like. But anyway, and I give you that chocolate, you eat it, and it will be so divine for you. You cannot explain how it tastes. Whereas for me, my facial expression will just tell you, you know what, this is something hectic. Like that, you cannot explain the passion that you have of certain things that you do. Likewise, in this instance, it's your passion that you have.
Yeah, it's a point of reference from your point in where you are in your life. Whether it be the chocolate or it be a mountain climb. Eat different strokes for different folks. And it's not... Mountain climbing, mountain trekking is not something that is a scary thing. It may be something that comes naturally to me, but it's something that if you experience it and you try it, you'll either grow to love it or you'll say, nope, I'm too lazy for this.
I've got an SMS here. At what age must you start something like this?
Shuka, that's a good question. My son, my eldest son, Zia, he's 14, and inshallah, my next mountain, which I plan for February next year, is Mount Aconcagua in South America,
inshallah.
In Argentina. Inshallah, I plan to take him along with me.
Next year, February, so that our weathers, you're looking at summer on that side also.
Yes.
Now, when it comes to that particular, talking of weather, Do you target which countries and you look at the weathers also?
Yes, you have to. For example, Mount Elbrus, which we'll chat about a little later. Mount Elbrus in Russia, which I just got back from. At the moment, it is summer in Russia. So we experience days of upward of 34 degrees Celsius.
Okay.
And on summer night, though, before sunrise, we experience minus 15 degrees with heavy 35 kilometer winds. So the weather varies, but you have to plan your trips according to the seasons.
Now, talking of that, you obviously you're talking of weather first of all, and then going up to the top. And when you get to the top, your climate is totally different. Now, when you start off and you look at the temperature, you obviously have that gear of yours. You have that thick, you know, whatever you may call it.
Let me tell you a little bit about it. Okay.
Yeah.
Firstly, each mountain range, each country has a different weather, different seasons. Okay. For example, Kilimanjaro. No matter what the weather is at the base of Kilimanjaro, the mountain itself has its own weather system. So you can never predict what the weather is going to be like, and you're probably going to experience all four seasons in one single day.
Oh, okay.
At a certain point in a mountain. When we talk about the gear, you know, when you talk trekking, mountain climbing, it's all about layering your clothes.
Yes.
On Elbrus, for example, we use 7 layers of clothing. I'll take you through it quickly. It's your thermal layer, your sports shirt on top of that, a light fleece, a thicker fleece, then a waterproof, windproof jacket, and then on top of that, a down jacket. Now, that's a lot of equipment, to be wearing, and then secondly, to be carrying along with you. So, each mountain range is very different, depending on the season that you're going.
All right. Our SMS line is open, 0727865520. Let us ask some questions, and some good questions. Let us, let's get stuck into this conversation with Brother Bilal also. And it's an experience. I'm feeling it already. I'm feeling this particular journey of yours. Now, you do have hiking. You have mountain trekking, as we spoke of earlier on, and then you have mountain climbing. What's the differences between those three now?
Correct. Hiking is something that the entire family can go do at Sacred Bosoi, Klip Riversberg Nature Reserve, for a weekend, 3 kilometers, 5 kilometers, perhaps camp overnight if you want to. You need a good pair of hiking boots and some one or two layers that's warm enough to keep you during the change of temperature during the day. Then you get mountain trekking, which requires a lot more equipment, a lot more serious equipment. You're not going to go out and buy a jacket from one of the fashion stores. You'd rather go and buy from one of the camping stores. For example, down jackets are more expensive, but their purpose is they serve their purpose when it actually gets colder. Then the third category is actual mountain climbing, which is more technical in case where you use harnesses and you use ice picks and you use a whole lot more ropes, and you're actually ascending vertically as opposed to in an incline in a mountain track.
Oh, and that's much more dangerous.
It is, as well as that it sometimes includes ice climbing as well. So you have to have some training in that.
Now, why Mount Elbrus in the first place?
Well, Mount Elbrus is obviously the highest peak in Europe. I intend to summit a peak on every continent, but also it's one of the seven summits of the world.
Okay.
So having done Kilimanjaro, having done Everest Base Camp, which is in preparation for the top of Everest, inshallah, in about 18 months' time.
Inshallah.
And having done Andes in Peru, Elbrus is the next mountain in line. My next mountain, besides Aconcagua in South America in February, inshallah, will be next year, July, which will be in Uzbekistan. That's Peak Lenin, and that's about 7,000 meters above sea level.
Now, just a brief, when you're going up to the top, you, for example, we talk of Mount Everest, no fear that when I get to the top, from the news that we've been getting from time to time, they get to the top and they just die there.
No, not fear at all. I understand the reality of what this kind of adventurous hobby actually entails. Let me tell you, there's three things that you have to consider when you're climbing mountains or even doing mountain trekking. Number one is your physical fitness. Do you need to be a triathlon athlete to be able to do a mountain? Certainly not. You don't need to. You need to have some level of fitness, though. Your second element is, how do you acclimatize to the altitude? You combat that by drinking lots and lots and lots of water and doing the trek as slowly as possible. The slower, the better. When you are going slow, I promise you, consider that you should be going even slower. The third element is your own mental strength. If your ambition, your determination is strong enough, you will get to the top. Those three things in unison will get you to the top.
It's yourself. It's how you want to do it.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you can be as fit as you want to. If you don't manage your altitude well, even the most fit athlete will not summit.
Okay. I've just got an SMS that's come in here. They're asking, what about oxygen when you go to the mountain top?
Okay. It's a good question. So, the different mountain ranges range from 4,000, 5,000, 6,000, all the way to over 8,000 meters above sea level. Altitude sickness only really starts affecting any individual. Even the guides can start getting altitude sickness above 4,000 meters above sea level. Even then, you do not need oxygen.
Okay.
Right? Although the air is thinning and your body is feeling the effects, you may experience some headaches, you may have muscle fatigue, and that's where you need to start managing your liquid intake and the speed at which you're doing it. As you go higher, 5,000, 6,000 meters, for example, Peak Lenin in Uzbekistan, I will need oxygen supplements.
Okay.
Okay. Mount Everest, if you're doing it from the Tibetan side, we normally give oxygen or do oxygen supplementation from base camp.
Okay.
From about 2 days before the trek actually starts. So yes, you do need oxygen, but only above a certain level. We do carry oxygen on the higher mountains, but it's for emergency purposes only. If you don't require it, you're out there to challenge your body in its most natural state, then we won't administer it.
So you're not climbing up with a cylinder on your back?
No, you're not.
You're not doing that, because that would be the picture that you climb. You need oxygen and you're climbing up with a cylinder on your back.
No, you don't.
Now, when it comes to all your I would say your climbs from whatever you've done, challenges?
I think your mental, your mindset is your biggest challenge. The fact that you make the preparations and get onto that plane to actually attempt summiting of a mountain is challenge number one. And if you overcome that hurdle, you're already halfway there. Secondly would be the physical stamina you have. The fitter you are, the more you will enjoy the trip. I always say, you know that saying, stop and smell the roses?
Yes.
You'd be able to do that on the mountain.
You're not stopping and panting.
You're not looking down at your feet and panting. Exactly. Exactly. I learned my lesson very quickly on Kilimanjaro because the space from between the time I decided to go till the time I actually went was a week and a half.
Okay.
So with no preparation at all, I went, I attempted summiting Kilimanjaro, and I did struggle.
Was that your first one?
That was my first one, yes. So it was a bit of a shock to my system, and I questioned what I was doing there in the first
place. You must have been saying, I'm nuts or something.
I really, really did struggle. But I've learned that the more physically fit you are, the more enjoyable the trip would be. And that's what it's about. We're not doing it for any... Well, one of the main reasons we're doing it is to actually enjoy a different experience.
Nerve-wracking?
I'm not an individual that gets nervous. So
that's why you're doing what you're doing, huh?
I'm sure it could be nerve-wracking a little to some people. But when you see the mountain and you see what nature is all about, and you meet people on a mountain and build camaraderie, and you realize that everyone else on that mountain is trying to attempt the exact same thing you are doing.
Yes.
The nerves go away.
And you become a family, no?
Yes, you do. You really do. Your guide becomes your best friend. Your co-travelers become your best friends. You realize that there's no need to be nervous. You're all in the same boat, and you're all out there to look out for yourselves.
Perfect. Now, if it's in South Africa and you're going up, your guide, you must be so careful, he don't take you and dump you and bury you somewhere in the middle of the mountain. Now, what's your biggest lesson that you've learned?
Mountain trekking, mountain climbing is, it's something I said before, that you can do it as a team or you can do it by yourself. The biggest lesson that I've learned, having climbed and trekked all of these mountains, is that nothing cannot be achieved if you don't. Let me rephrase that. Anything that you want to achieve can be achieved if you just put your mind to it.
Anything for that matter.
On the mountain, when your body is giving up, when you have nothing left in those muscles, the only thing that takes you through is your determination and your drive to succeed at what you're attempting.
Yes, and also your willpower in going up to the top. That, yes, I have to do it, I want to do it, I've got to get to the top. Come what may, I have to do that. When you get down and you say, oh, it was, okay, good, now my next one starts. But now your decisions from one mountain to the next, what is it that you decide which one to tackle next? Is it, are you going on a scale where you're climbing up, I would say bit by bit, or you're just selecting any mountain because it's on that particular continent?
I'm selecting by continent, number one, but more so is my intention being Mount Everest in 18 months, inshallah, is I need to acclimatize to various environments. So in Kilimanjaro, day one is you're walking through a rainforest. Day two, it becomes a little bit more deserty. On Elbrus, it's a snow-capped peak, so you're walking on ice and snow, and sometimes you take a step and your leg goes you go knee deep into the snow, and at other times you take a step and your spikes at the bottom of your shoe doesn't even scratch the surface of the ice. That's the range of environments that we're walking in. So in building up to Everest, I need to be able to, number one, see to various altitudes, and therefore I've done everything as high as 5,895 on Kili, whereas 5,642 on Elbrus.
Right.
But I've also done in the tropical environments as well as the snow-capped environments.
So that is, now, when you start from the bottom, you obviously have greenery, the foot of the mountain. And as you climb further up, you'd find that the greenery is now disappearing. And then you get the ice, and you get all that. And you come to the mountaintop, you've got your snow. What? Give us that feeling.
Yes, every day is a different day, but starting at the bottom, you're usually walking through rainforest. As you get higher, the trees become shorter.
Yeah.
The animal, there's less, much less animals. Then you go into what I call the mountain desert. It's not like a sandy desert. It's rocks, and it's cold, and there's much less animals, much smaller animals, and all you see is the crows. Then you get to a point where you're walking on slate, which is a rock at a certain level.
And that's slippery, I presume?
It is slippery, yes. And therefore, your equipment is the right equipment. You're not going to do this in your normal cross-trainer techies.
Yes.
And then you get to the snow caps, where you need snow plastic boots, not normal hiking boots, and you need what we call crampons, which is the spikes that cramp onto your boots.
Yeah, so that hooks into whatever surface you have, and you climb up to the top.
Yes.
But then as you're going along, you obviously hook your ropes or whatever it is with those, or what you may call them, yes, those clips.
So on Mount Elbrus, we needed to have harnesses, which are tied onto your thighs and on around your waist. And when at certain steep inclines, you'd need to hook your rope onto the rope that's set in the mountain. The challenge there is that when the snow is not high, the rope is high that you're hooking onto, high off the ground. But when after when you're descending again, and if it has snowed, that same rope that was a meter off the ground is now you're basically around your feet, so you're dragging your rope along with you.
So that becomes so difficult then.
It does become more challenging.
So your rope that you start off from the bottom, you follow your rope right to the top that you're hitting it up, and as you're coming down, you undo it as you're coming down.
Yes, it depends on what part of the mountain you are. You're not using the ropes all the time. In most times, you're using your trekking poles, and you're going up at a very, very steep incline, I'd say above 70 degrees. If you're walking in the snow, you need to be able to kick the front of your foot, the toe of your foot,
into the
ice,
yes,
so that you can get a good grip and take your next step. Otherwise, you'll slip.
So you do hook yourself properly then?
You like have that. To.
Okay, there's an SMS that's come in here. It says, have you had any discouragements? If so, how did you deal with it?
Absolutely. People are try to detract all the time. It's more, the reason they're doing that is because they don't have a full understanding of what we are attempting.
Yeah.
We're not going out there on a suicide mission.
Yes.
We understand the risks, and we are taking preliminary cautions to address those risks. So therefore, the only way to explain to a detractor is to give them more information. Understand that most people are born in an environment where of safety, where everything is found. We have airbags in our cars. It's everything around. In media, it's all about safety and comfort and security.
And at home is mommy's boy and daddy's boy.
And at home is mommy's boy. Picture this. Take this for an example. If you take a balloon, a normal balloon, right, and you are that balloon. If you blow it up, blow it full. Just carry on blowing it.
Yes.
Carry on blowing in the balloon, and the balloon expands.
Right.
And then suddenly you let that air out of that balloon. Is that balloon the exact same shape that it has been before you started blowing it?
It's got stretch marks on there.
It has. Certainly, it has changed. And now, and that's exactly what experiences do to you. It's about getting people out of their comfort zones and making people realize what's available out there and how you can change your life by just experiencing something different.
So it's something totally unique. Now, what's your advice to some of our adventurers? We've got lots of adventurers out there. These adventurers that we have do not, they probably don't know that they are adventurers.
Let me dispel the dangers of hiking, trekking, or mountain climbing to begin with. as I said, with anything that you do, there are risks, but if you address those risks, you make whatever you're doing more safer.
Right.
My advice is try elements of a track before you necessarily go and try and summit. So I'm fortunate that I have a fairly athletic physique without much training to be able to do mountain trekking and mountain climbing. But not everyone has that. My biggest advice would be, instead of buying all the equipment, rather rent equipment.
Initially, yes.
Initially.
Yeah.
Because the down jacket alone, I'll give you an example, the cheapest correct down jacket to use on Elbrus is 4,500 rand.
And you can hire it there.
So my advice, two pieces of advice, do homework on what kind of trek you want to do. And number two, besides investing in a really good pair of hiking shoes, rather hire equipment rather than buying equipment.
You know, you get these jockeys, for example, I find many, that they go for horse riding. The first day they go for horse riding, they go out and they say, I love it. They buy the saddle and they only short of buying the horse.
Yes.
After three weeks, you check in the newspaper, at less than a quarter of the price or less than a tenth of the price, they're selling the equipment.
For sure. Huh? I have a lot of friends that have full sets of golf clubs, full sets of scuba gear, and they've never done it more than once or twice.
Because your first day was enjoyable, and you know what, this is my line, this is what I'm going to do. And then when you get stuck into it, you say, no, man, please, man. That's the way it is. But you've got your own gear. You've got your plans forward, inshallah, the way from what I can gather, you've got your plans for the next 18 months, what to do next and so on. Now, when it comes to doing all this, do you prepare for your accommodation at base camp and you do all that? Is there some specific companies that are doing this?
So, here in South Africa, the company we've opened is an advisory service and an agency called 79 Travel. All right. And we'll share the information with you later in the show.
We're done at 10, now we've got 2 minutes.
Okay, so maybe I should share it now. www.79travel.co.za
79 is in the
number 79.
79.
That's correct.
www.79travel.co.za,
correct. I'll give you an email address.
G.
It's purity, P-U-R-I-T-Y, at 79, the number 7.
9travel.co.za.
So
anybody want any information, wanting to go here, wanting to share your experiences, they can talk to you.
Yes.
You'll help them with all this information?
Correct. What 79 Travel has done is they found operators in each country, professional operators, to be able to assist with any of the needs of a traveler.
That's what we want. We want the ease and comfort, because all the adventurers out there, the first question is, where do I start?
Yeah.
And this is a starting point. And this is a unique starting point, because this is something which I would say not anybody can just give you advice on these things.
Yeah. So email at purity at 79 Travel. I will personally answer. And if you need, I'm happy to meet anyone at any time to give them personal advice.
So that, inshallah. We're already out of time. I think news is going to come into the studio now, so we've got to get out of here. But briefly and just very quick, what's your advice to the listeners out there?
Challenge yourself. Don't let anyone stop you. Don't let any detractors talk you out of it. If it's something that you would like to try, give us a call. I'll give you all the advice you need. Go ahead and push yourself further.
In one word, it's Nimari Jahe.
No. A better word is Alhamdulillah.
Alhamdulillah, inshallah. And when you go up there, the Qudrat of Allah, that's what you see.
The summit is what you want. It's a humbling experience, but at the same time, you realize what Allah has created.
Jazakallah. Jazakallah for that. We're already out of time. It's 10 o'clock news time. Jazakallah, brother Bilal Vahidi. So, I really appreciate you joining us on this lovely Sunday morning, talking of your experiences. I'm going to sit with you for the next 2-3 days, talking about your experiences. I really appreciate that. From myself, Muhammad Lambat, until next week, same place, same time. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.